Hello, and welcome back to The Great Game, an Australian Mega Game podcast. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jack.
And this is episode 13, the third and final recording from OMGCon, in which we sat down with Patrick Rose and Glenn to talk about Running Hot, which was Paddy's game of a pre-cyberpunk Britain in the not-so-distant future. Before we jump into the episode, over to Jack for a little bit of mega game news.
Yeah, so Climate Crisis, the online mini mega game of international politics and global warming, went off as planned, and they're running it again on the 1st of November. So we'll include a link if you want to read more about that and get into their Discord. And Red Planet Rising, a Martian mega game, will be coming down the pipe in December. And it's been moved entirely online. And again, there'll be more info in the show notes if you're interested in joining that one. And finally, the mega game makers have also announced their 2021 roster of games, with five games planned from May through to December. And we'll have a full listing in the show notes.
Awesome. So this is, like I said, the third and final recording from OMGCon. We sat down with Patrick Rose to have a chat about Running Hot, which was his mega game that he brought to the online space, which is a pre-cyberpunk kind of near-future dystopian game that saw a lot of role-playing, tabletop role-play elements brought to the mega game world. It was a really interesting conversation. This is probably the episode from our live recordings which had a few technical glitches in it. One that Jack was missing at the very start because of IT problems. And then throughout there were just a few little hiccups. So hopefully it doesn't detract, and I hope you enjoy. Going. Fortunately, Jack's having issues, so we'll hopefully be joined by him along the way. But welcome back to The Great Game. This is our third and final live podcast for OMGCon. So I'm being joined by Paddy and Glenn, who are coming and joining us tonight, this morning, whatever it is, to talk about Running Hot, which was another mega game that ran over at the con. And I won't go into too much detail, but before we get going, do you guys just wanted to introduce yourselves and explain where in the mega game verse that you're from, and brief background on how you got to Running Hot?
Okay, so I'm Patrick Rose. I'm nominally part of the Pennine Mega Games groups, which is the bit of England which is the Pennine Pass, basically. So running games in Leeds, Manchester, Sheffield, that sort of region in the northwest. I did my first game, which was Tim Campbell's Shot Heard Around the Universe, about 2 years ago, and I've done did another game last year, and then lots of games after that. So this is my first actual run of my own game, but I've done a bit of controlling this year. So basically, to get myself ready for controlling my own game, and just I'll let someone else do all the hard work of designing it, and I'll just help them run it.
Yeah, awesome. And Glenn, you were saying briefly, you've got a half dozen games or so under your belt.
Yeah, I've played four games with Mega Games Texas. I've helped with one with Control, and then this was my first online game.
Awesome. Okay, learning experience for everyone. Jack, you made it.
Hello. Yes, I don't know if you can hear me. The corporate overlords tried to shut me down, but I managed to hack back in.
Yeah, it's a thematic twist on the it's a narrative in joke. It's all gone to plan.
Yeah, we deliberately did this as to fit in with the theme. Absolutely. That's the story.
All right, cool. Well, in that case, I might just push us along and start having a chat about Running Hot really upfront before we get into anything else. Paddy, did you want to give us a bit of a rundown, like an elevator pitch, if you can, of what this game is and how you came up with it?
Okay, so Running Hot is, I called it a pre-cyberpunk mega game. It's what in most cases in the cyberpunk, in your usual cyberpunk dystopia, you're introduced to it at the point where the megacorps have already taken over, and the setting is, it's kind of just accepted that the corporations are in charge and they've got it. And I didn't manage to find any cyberpunk literature at all that was set at the beginning of that, so the point where they just bought this huge swathe of land or whatever. So I wanted to set the game there because I don't think that had ever be really been explored, and I wanted to see whether the same sort of thing would end up happening if you let players at it. It was originally designed for something in the UK. There's a thing called the National Student Role-Playing thing, which is a like inter-varsity university like thing for like role playing. So they have a whole bunch of various tabletop RPGs going. They have a board game track and that. And Sheffield, which is where I'm based, the university that I'm a part of, well, was a part of, are hosting it. So it was originally designed for them as like a thing for them to do, for them to have it, and then it kind of spiraled from there into something like for Pennine and for as an online thing at OMGCon.
Right. And you were saying that this was the first one of it, and it wasn't particularly planned to be an online game. You said that you'd done some playtesting. Was that done online as well? What's the time frame for designing this game?
So I started it about a year ago, about now. I think like at this point a year ago, I'd finished writing the first draft of the rule book. And I was doing a whole bunch of like in-person playtests. So all the run mechanics for how all that worked, that was all like done in person. Like the research game, that was originally tested in person a couple of times. I didn't bother playtesting a council game because I was like, it's a council game, it'll just work. And then COVID happened, so I couldn't do it in person. So we thought, well, do we think that we can do this in online? So we had a chat with the control team to say, like, here's how I think it could work. Here's the sort of things that I would do. Do we think this has legs? And everyone said, yeah, this seems to just about work-ish. So then we did that, and then I just pitched it to Pennine saying, like, I don't feel comfortable doing an in-person game with things as it are. I just don't think it's going to get better. And I don't really want to put 40 people into a room more than 40 people into a room, and then I've got to keep track of all that. And I just thought that's a whole bunch of stress that I don't want to deal with. Like, let's do it online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of difficult decisions earlier this year. So this was the first run, and then you've also got another run of it lined up pretty soon, I understand. Again, online, obviously.
So this, like, when I pitched this to OMGCon, I'd originally pitched to OMGCon thinking that the con was going to be in October-ish, so that I had the chance to do the Pennine run, and then I could do the OMGCon when I'd, like, filed the edges off. And then they told me that it was happening at the beginning of September, and that lost 2 weeks from, like, not 2 weeks off my deadline. So I was like, oh, okay, then. So panically wrote the rest of the stuff as I was going. It's been a hectic week to finish everything off. but yeah, it's being run like the Pennine run, which was supposed to be the first run of it, is in 2 weeks. Well, 2 weeks yesterday, so 13 days.
Okay, and I mean, we'll go pretty hard into the game itself and how you're feeling afterwards. But you know, the day after, how are you feeling about that one coming up? Do you think you've got your work cut out for you? Or are you pretty confident?
So the entire aim of like yesterday was it had to not fall over on turn one, and it didn't fall over on turn one. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a success. I was fairly confident that all of the sub games like worked together on their own. It's whether they all fed together nicely, and I think they mostly did. The problems that we had are kind of control admin level. I don't think players will have been frustrated by them just because of they took a lot of time to resolve just from a control perspective. But I'm not worried about it. I think that the game itself works quite well, so I'm happy to I'm happy with it. I'm not worried yet.
Awesome. Okay.
I can say that from a player perspective, we saw a little bit of that at the beginning. It started off kind of slow, and then things just started running much more smoothly as the game went on.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's been my experience, my limited experience with online mega games as well. There's always a speed hump at the start, whatever the scale is, and then it flattens out. That's really cool.
I mean, I think you also get that in an actual like in-person game as well. Like in an in-person game, you always have those first two turns where people are kind of still getting to grips with it. I think like the main like control problems we were having, we were like, well, actually, we can solve this problem quite easily. Let's just open a new chat and then let the players handle it, and they can just say, this is what I'm doing, as opposed to all waiting inside a voice chat. So I think those are the same sort of problems we would have had in person, and we would have probably come up with a faster system in person as well.
Yep.
Definitely.
Regarding all those sort of mini games that you were saying where this test was about trying to make sure they all connected, do you want to just quickly run us through what they were? So what was the lay of the land for all the different teams and roles and what they were doing in this game?
Okay, so on a like broad level, you have two main sides to this. You have your corporation, there are five of them, who have got teams of three, and then you have your runners on the other side. There are four runner teams, and there's about the same in total between them. I think that we end up weighted slightly more towards the runners. The corporations, their team of three, you've got your CEO, who is your team lead, and they basically spend most of the time inside a corporate council voting on the laws of this new state that's being created. Like the completely hand-waved legal situation is that it's they follow the British law, but they can vote to add extra stuff on top of it. It doesn't really make any sense, and no one asked any questions, which I was really grateful for, because it doesn't make any sense at all. like a lot of the decisions for this like don't make sense if you like take more than a cursory look at them. So they're just playing like a council game where they've got agenda items to vote on, and they can all argue about that. Then you have your research players who are like going off and doing experiments, or with like a little card game that I made, which basically is just a case of making sets, and they score points from that, and those points I'll give them resources which they can then use to trade in for technologies. And those technologies could be things like the example I use in the rule book is self-heating porridge, which is a thing that they can just sell on to people as an income boost. Or it could be various protection cards to help defend their facilities. And all the research tech that they get gets put inside one of the facilities, and it's a security player to keep them secure. So they have to put a budget on each of the facilities to make sure that when people come against it, they don't get all their stuff nicked. And they have things like security turrets, or I think at some point we end up with armored drones that were very scary. And like it's a case of that. And then like that entire stuff is liberally stolen from Android Netrunner. So you have a whole bunch of protection cards like as layers of security. Awesome. So they hit the first card, and if they manage to succeed it, they go on to the next one, and so on. It's all quite simple die rolls. And then if they get through, they get to access the cards, and maybe they'll steal it, or maybe they'll copy it. And the runners are supposed to either do it for glory, or they could say, some corp could say, I want you to go steal this thing from them because we want to use it ourselves. And that's basically it. And then we had a press player who had a lot of fun with headlines and talking absolute nonsense, and they kept on saying how much great it was that all of the stories they were told conflicted, and I was like, great, that's how your press is meant to work. And then I had a couple of government players as well who were nominally keeping an eye on things as the British government. Basically their entire job was to fund things as the game goes on, so they can say, oh well, the government is willing to put some, like, do a tender for some prosthetic arms for the NHS or whatever. They're basically just an injection for more money. So that's what it was all for.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear you mention Android Netrunner, because that's one of my favorites, and it was definitely sticking out to me as you were describing things. It also seemed, the situation seems a little similar to another board game called New Angeles. I'm not sure if you've played that at all, but it's one where corporations have created their own state and they can do whatever they want, but they need to be careful because if they mess up too badly, the feds will come in and reclaim everything, basically. Is that anything? Have you heard of that one?
I haven't heard of that one, no, but it's like basically exactly what's happened here. Like the British government are keeping an eye on things. Like near the end of the game, they did stop mobilizing the army because they were worried about what was about to happen. So the corporations have to, they're supposed to do a whole bunch of shady stuff. Like that's like entirely within their remit. It's a case of making sure that they don't do the shady stuff too openly, if that makes sense.
Sounds like that board game may have copied your Mega game directly.
Well, it's actually, the board game is set in the Netrunner universe, actually. That's why I kind of bring it up.
So, Glenn, where in that big sort of combo of different teams and different activities were you during this game?
So my character was Scorer. He's a Gruffster, which means that he was one of the gang members. The Gruffsters were a gang that each of the gangs seemed to have like a purpose that guided them. And there were, some of them were really kind of weird. Like the Facers were all obsessed with one actor. Our gang just liked to hang out in a specific bar, and that's what brought us together. So we kind of felt like we were like the For the People group. I was one of the gang members, and we were making runs against the corporations.
Cool. And sorry, awesome. just before we go further into the game, from your perspective, Glenn, how did the different team members on that on the gangs, like, was a differentiation, or you're kind of equal?
We had a distinct gang leader for our gang, and so for us, that was kind of the biggest, the main differentiation was we turned to our leader, who kind of said yes or no on things, and then we split up. Beyond that, we were pretty equal.
Yeah, like they as a like design choice, it's a the corporations have got like quite a rigid team structure. Like you should be doing what your CEO does, but the gangs themselves is like a case of you have a nominal leader, but you don't necessarily have to all work together as a team. Like feel free to go off and talk to other people and go on runs with them. And even like your lead isn't necessarily your actual lead. Like the only reason they're there is so that they, as a gang, you can have an actual focus and someone who's actually making decisions for you. I felt if it was complete anarchy, a player wouldn't know what to do, and telling someone that you're in charge means that people go, okay, well, I'm just going to let them make decisions for me, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, our briefing said that we're a real loose affiliation. In our gang, we were pretty tight knit, and we worked together as kind of one unit. But I also saw during the game where another gang had a big argument break out because one of them had gone rogue.
Awesome. Fantastic. And how did the actual... Glenn, were you involved with this, with the actual running or hacking minigame itself?
Yes. I was frequently the run leader. That's actually kind of what I got said to do. I think just because my character had good stats. So I led almost every run that our gang went on. And I wouldn't describe it necessarily as just a hacking minigame, because there was also... there was a combination of hacking and also brute strength. So there's some of the things you'd come across would be like, you have to you have to get through a door, fight off a guard dog, and then you get to, then you get to like things like robo scorpions that get a little bit scarier to deal with. So there were elements of both in making the runs. So in the way I envisioned it was that we were like, it was like a heist and we're breaking in.
Awesome, yeah, fantastic.
Kind of like,
and
Yeah, it's like the entire like facility stuff. It's a case of you are running a heist against a specific facility, so there's a whole bunch of physical stuff for them to break through, which is things like security turrets, and then you end up with the cyber stuff where I can decide to steal as much like random bits of folklore as possible, which is where most of the robo scorpions came from.
Awesome. And so, Glenn, how did you find that going in practice? And do you have any surprising stories or anything wild that happened when you were going through that kind of thing, the heist stuff?
So I had thought that because it was very mechanical that I wouldn't like it, because in the past I generally played roles that aren't the mechanic heavy role. At first there was a little bit of kind of, we all had kind of figure out the mechanics and how they worked. Cause it is, I think probably one of the more mechanical set aspects of the game. But then it got to flowing as it went. There weren't really any awesome stories during, other than just like seeing who we're up against. Like the first time we found a robo scorpion, we're like, a robo scorpion? What is this? And so that was kind of the awesome. Most of our kind of interesting moments during the run. We're just encountering what we're up against, or even trying to. Some of it seemed kind of vague. So trying to having conversation about what does this mean? We encountered Angel. Is that some sort of AI interface? What is Angel? And kind of developing a story amongst ourselves of what we think that represented.
Awesome, cool. And I want to bring it around to the online aspect, that it was a real life game that was translated to online. Patty, were there any? What did you find the biggest challenge in that? Because you had originally tended to real life, you had to take it online. And what do you think was maybe the biggest benefit as well?
So, like a big benefit is that you can, I can basically put a whole bunch of spreadsheets. So all the complicated formula about like, oh, if you have this many runners against you, you get some bonus credits. If you've got this many runners against you, it's more. And like that formula can be hard to parse quite quickly. Whereas I can just put it inside a spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet can just tell you the number. Like you just plug it in, and the formula comes out. So that was a real benefit. But on the flip side, it meant that I had to do all the work to set up all those spreadsheets, and like I understand how they work because I made them, but not all the players will have done, and it would have been hard for them to get on top of it. I think like the biggest pain point was the runs themselves, because my most valued control, Dan, like had to sit in a chat and basically say, okay, right, who's going on a run here? Okay, I need to put the bot command in to create a run for them so they can all go off and do that. Who's actually protecting it? Oh, okay, well, I've missed this person, so I need to add them on top of it. So that was just a whole, that was where the main pain point was from my perspective. Like, that was a lot of control admin to do, and it all kind of fell on one person. And then the other, like, heavy admin bit was when they were creating building new facilities, which also fell on exactly the same control. So there was a point, like, halfway through the game where everyone decided to build, like, 3 or 4 facilities at once. And he was just like saying, we need to extend team time because I'm just not going to be able to finish these in the 5 minutes I'm supposed to be doing it in.
Yeah, definitely. I've run into that a bit myself where our game we put together, Dark and Stormy, we did not at all anticipate how much admin work would be required for an online game in terms of facilitating everything. It gets pretty crazy. Tossing it over to you, Glenn, I know this was the first time that you've played in an online mega game. What were you expecting going in, I guess, and how did it end up actually going?
I don't know that I had really strong expectations going in, but I know that, like, when I first opened up the server, I was really impressed with how built out everything was. Like, for example, in our gang area, we're the bar, and we had 4 different channels for the fireside by the bar, the street outside the bar, the main bar room, our function awesome. Room that was hidden back away. And so even I looked at it and my thought was, this is like really well built out. Almost overbuilt, but then we ended up using all of those spaces, so it worked.
Right.
Yeah, like the whole like the various places for all the courts. Like the yours was the easiest to write because you were a pub, and I do have to bring this up. It's a pub, not a bar. Like we're in Britain. It's like an old fashioned.
All right, settle down.
A number of one of the main things about this thing is like, cause it's all set in a British thing, and because this is primarily an American com, I've got a whole bunch of Americans there using their American spellings for things. I'm like, no, stop doing that, you're in Britain, you'll spell things correctly. God damn it. But like all of that stuff was kind of built because the first, like, I think definitely that like, the first proper online game was Gothenburg's Den of Wolves, and like a lot of the structure for how I built things was based on like how that worked, and because I felt that was a really nice way of like each of the different ships in Den of Wolves, they had like an airlock and they had some like flavor channels. Like then, like mechanically, they do absolutely nothing, but as a player, it kind of helps you understand where you are. And just having in a real game, you can have like a conversation, and there can be people around you. Whereas in an online game, you need to have a separate channel. So just giving people that space. It turns out it's like really, really useful. And I think pretty much every single game so far has basically used the same sort of thing.
Well, and it really added to the atmosphere. For example, if we visited the corporations, we're expected to go to their foyer channel first before we're allowed to go into any of their actual rooms. And that felt appropriate. Whereas if we were having a conversation on the street outside of our pub, somebody would just pop in. We'd go, oh, look, there's somebody else here. And he might say, I'm just chilling on the street. Ignore me. And we'd be like, well, let's take our conversation inside, guys.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I experienced a murder mystery on Discord, which had a similar thing where each channel, they had the channels for like, you know, the parlor room and the stairwell and all that kind of thing. And each channel was limited to a certain amount of people. So it would say only 2 people are allowed to be chatting in the stairwell, and so you'd go, okay, let's go have a private conversation over here. I think that's something that online games can struggle with, is that sense of place when it's all on Discord. Like that sense of atmosphere is something you really have to work to push into the game for sure.
And it also, like, just by putting like these things in, you can be like, I've just seen that someone has gone over to the Grufsters. That means that they are speaking to the Grufsters. What are they doing? So like there's a whole bunch of that. I like seeing, if you look once I look through all the channels and you see that there's a whole bunch of people over in like Gordon Corporation's boardroom, you're like, something's definitely going down. And like that because that's the main, like for me, like when you're playing an in-person game, a lot of the information that you pick up is just who's talking to who. So like, and you can't, it's kind of hard to get that in Discord because you've got so many channels to deal with. And so at least putting them in a place means you can be like, well, they're talking to that person and they're talking at that base, so it means that they are definitely talking about something together and they're planning something together, which is I think a more useful bit of information, and it kind of makes up for that.
And we had that happen in our group. We had the augmented security specialist was hanging around in our fireside all the time, and we were talking a lot. But we had a couple of different people talk to us and say, "Why is he always there? What is going on? Are y'all in cahoots together? What is happening?" And they definitely noticed and commented.
Awesome. That's really interesting because in the SDM game I just played, that was listed as a bit of a negative, because if you had people who were trying to start a coup against the USSR leader and going off and talking alone, then everyone would go, wait, hang on a second, why are these people all gathering? But I think in this setting, it makes a lot of sense, and it's really thematic that you can see what's going on and see who's talking to who.
Yeah,
very cool. It's not perfect as a thing. Like the thing that you would happen in an online game is that you would just find a quiet corner and hope that no one spotted you. As a thematic, I think for those sorts of conversations, like we had some neutral channels which were like various coffee shops or whatever, which were so that people could be like, well, I'm going to go speak to you at the coffee shop, and we're definitely not doing anything like related to our groups or relevant teams whatsoever. That's what those kind of are. Awesome. I've absolutely no idea whether they got used, but who knows?
Talking about the theme and atmosphere side of things, how did you feel about the setting, Glenn? Like, as an American and as, you know, trying out the game, how did you feel that stuff came across and in terms of the setting of it?
So, as an American, I definitely don't necessarily picture kind of the cultural shift of what does this look like as a British setting, but I didn't feel like that hindered me in any way. And in terms of understanding, to me it was very much about the kind of the steampunk like kind of descent into anarchy. Like for the Gruffsters, we were all trying to like prevent it from becoming just this corporate fascist nightmare dystopia, and so that part really came through very strongly. Is if we don't do something, we're all going to be at the mercy of whatever these corporations decide for us, and it's not going to be pretty.
Fantastic.
I wanted to just jump backwards a little bit and ask you a couple of technical questions about the online nature of the game. You're talking about the spreadsheets, Patty. How much of that interfacing did you do, Glenn, as a player? With spreadsheets and stuff.
Each player has a spreadsheet that is their own personal character sheet. And they were really well designed to make it very easy for us to use as users, be players, because I would type in a card number and the spreadsheet would automatically populate with all the information about the card.
Yeah.
And
cool.
If our game got notoriety, Control would update it, and it would automatically update in all of our copies of the spreadsheet.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
The runner ones were like fairly simple, because like all you kind of just had your own resources, and then you had your equipment stuff. So we have a big spreadsheet of Doom somewhere else, that they were all populating that stuff from. The corporation ones were so much more complicated, and like the first, when we did the playtest. Basically, a lot of the feedback I got from the security players was like, I can't use this. I don't understand where to put stuff. It's really hard for me to keep track of it. So I've changed that. So you've got, for the corporations, you have your resources sheet, but also they have like a proper transaction log, because they're a real corporation. So if they're spending money, they need to say where it's come from, which is basically so that players could have the time where they would want to make their own like private bank accounts or whatever. And they just had to put it inside the corporate logs with a good enough note that no one questioned it.
Right.
And then also like all the research cards, they need to like put those inside facilities. So, and then each facility itself has, they were supposed to like put their protection cards inside it based on all the ID stuff that we were giving them in a sort of sensible list. And it would all magically populate and do stuff, which that was one of the other things I was really worried was just going to break at some point. Like there were a couple of points where like I'd set up some validation and just hadn't set it up properly, so it didn't work. So people were like, I can't put my budgets in because it's saying I don't have the money, but I definitely have the money. And then I'd look at it and go, okay, well, I've been an idiot. So then I had to run through and fix them all. But like as a, I think like they were quite smart and allowed people to do what they need to do, like, but and give the information they needed to in a quite complicated way. Like quite complicated information that would be really easy to do in a physical thing, because you would just have a stack of cards, and putting that in a spreadsheet is a lot harder. But I think it worked. I think most of the corp security players kind of understood how they worked after a couple of turns. So it was
okay. Cool. And then one other thing I wanted to just backtrack to was the heists. It sounded really interesting the way you were describing it, Glenn, narratively, what kind of stuff you guys would get up to. But what did it mechanically look like when you ran into the Robo Scorpions and you're breaking into stuff? What were the mechanics of doing these heists without giving too much away, I suppose?
Mechanically, it was a total dice fest. And I think that actually works better online than in person, because I wouldn't want to be rolling 12d8s in person and adding them up, counting them up regularly. I think that actually worked better online. Each character has some basic stats: brute, hack, charisma, body. And so every time you'd encounter a new barrier, it would be, for example, it might be a hack barrier or it might be a brawn barrier. And so as team leader, I would use my total value in dice. And then everybody else who's supporting my team would add half the value of their attribute to the die pool. And then, so I might roll, at the very beginning, I was rolling about 7 dice. By the end, I was rolling 12. And then you count the number that are 5 or higher. And the barrier describes what security gets to roll. And it's whoever rolls higher, which is usually, or at least in my experience, was usually us. We got to keep going. And I think the balance kind of worked out, because we would have to run against 5 or 6 things and have to beat them all to get through. And so we usually won, but it was still scary for us, because a single bad roll and we could all be wounded, or we could all be tagged. And a tag meant that the corporations were onto us. They could find us. They knew where we were. And we would have more difficulty in future runs if we didn't get that tag cleaned off.
That it does.
Awesome. Classic Netrunner mechanic, though.
Yeah. It's funny. This is sounding really role-playing gamey to me, like more than I expected from this setting. With the dice, I can totally imagine how it would be better, more accessible to roll that many dice online and a lot quicker to resolve things. When you were looking at running this in the real world, not on Discord, Patty, was... Were you still going to digitize any part of the game, like the dice?
No, I was probably going to just let them roll. So one of a really hard balancing act is you want it to be possible for the runners to get through, but you also don't want to make it easy for them. So like the fact that like Glenn never failed a run is kind of a bit weird. Like in theory, he should have failed like at least one, which is kind of why like it's you're rolling like 12 dice, but all of them could be below a 5. It's there's like supposed to be like an implicit balance for even if you're only rolling one die and the other side is rolling like 7, there is still a chance that you will win. There will still be the chance for an upset, which is kind of one of the things I wanted to happen. I think like a lot of the corp stuff didn't. I don't think they necessarily grew as much as they should have done, but also the balance against the corps about like all the runners decided to gang up and going, it's one thing, is that like it's kind of hard to hide that there are 10 people coming towards your facility or brandishing shivs and PDAs and whatever. So they get like the facility gets some extra money with which they use, and they can spend money to make the defenses better as things are coming up against it. And also like if you like an intentional part of the design is that the security players are basically playing a shell game. So like, again, this is basically just Netrunner more and more. So like tricking people to coming into a facility where there isn't actually anything.
Awesome.
That's an intentional part of it. So that it's quite easy for them to just move the tech around and have a massive section.
Awesome. And in the green room, Patty, you mentioned that you took inspiration from listening to podcasts about some other cyberpunk mega games and added the mechanic that if you did fail a run, you could continue going at a penalty. Do you want to chat about that for a bit?
Yeah, so I can't remember when it was, but I can't remember which podcast it was, but one of the UK podcasts talked about Mirror Shades, which is Alex Beck's cyberpunk mega game. And one of the bits of feedback that I think Tim was giving as a runner was like, Tim Campbell, that is, he basically was like saying, you feel like you were almost there and then you just hit and end the run and you just feel like, oh, now I'm stuck, like, what can I go? And just like having the option to say, I want to take a really, really hefty penalty because I think I'm nearly there. I thought that was a nice, interesting, balanced decision. And like for the entire runs, the like another intentional design decision is that the run leader is the one who gets to make every single decision. So if you're going to take that penalty instead, that's the run leader's decision. And who takes that penalty is the run leader's decision. So, and also when they complete the run leader is the one who gets all the benefits. And like, in theory, you're supposed to share it out amongst the group, but the run leader could choose to not. So they could be like, oh yeah, you've come on this run and you can soak all the damage for me. And then I'm just going to keep it all. And that's a problem that is entirely player driven. And I don't really care about it. And it's an interesting one for people to deal with. So that's what I was really hoping for. So that's, I think like giving people the chance to make a difficult decision like that, if they'd kept on like hitting and failing, then they would have just taken a load of damage and it would have been, at some point, it's just not worth continuing going. But letting players think that it is and letting them make bad decisions is important from my perspective as a designer, at least.
Definitely. It sounds like a great fail forward mechanic that, you know, the story will keep going forward kind of thing, that they can choose to keep taking damage and seeing progressing things. That sounds fantastic.
Before I just jumped into sort of the post-game and what's next and final sort of thoughts about it, I wanted to ask about the mechanics. You were saying how you obviously needed to change some things to bring the game online, but did you change any mechanics themselves to transition to online for whatever reason, or is it basically ported straight from how you expected it to happen in real life?
It's basically ported like straight out. There's a couple of like changes, like really really minor changes. So like the other thing is for like all the money stuff, your CEO is in the physical game, they would be the ones that would actively receive the money. Like it's your the CEO is in charge of all the money. Whereas in this, it's kind of hard to do that. Like there's implicit stuff inside all the spreadsheets so that they can give the security budget to other wilds. But there's nothing stopping the security player to saying, no, I need extra money. I'm just going to go change it inside the thing and give themselves more budget. That ended up changing. Like my research game ended up changing massively just because when a really quick card game that you can play in person just doesn't work online. As like we were using Roll20 for it just because it was the easiest way of having a shared public like board that you people could interact with as with their own private decks. So when we did the playtest for that, I basically checked with my research control and he said, oh yeah, so like they all got one turn in the 10 minutes. I was like, hang on, that doesn't make any sense. Like there was only three of them. Like they should have done like loads. And he said, like, just try it. And then me and two other people tried it. I was like, but this just doesn't work as fast as you want it to. And it's not because players can't do the maths in their head as easy as in person. Like they can still do everything the fastest. It's just the sheer act of dragging a card from your hand inside Roll20, putting it in the middle, putting it all together, tracking what it is that you actually got, then drawing more cards. But it's just like, it's a lot of just annoying mechanical stuff that you can't easily do inside an online thing. And like similar sort of thing with like I was saying with the pain points for run organization, like having to set up all the little channels for them to do that thing so that information about what was in this facility isn't public to everyone. Like just putting that in an actual in-person game is a case of just saying like, right, you line up there, you line up there, you line up there, you do it. Whereas in this case of control saying, okay, who's going here? Okay, who's going here? Who's going here? And just that just adds time to things. Like things which are fast in person aren't fast in online and vice versa.
Well, that's probably a good segue to my next question then, which Chris also asked us in the chat. Are you going to be changing anything definitively before you run this again in 2 weeks' time?
I'm not sure yet is the basic answer. I think that there's... Yeah. I think I'm like happy with it. I think the thing that we have to change isn't a game change. It's just how do we do these runs in a way that people don't spend like of the 50-minute phase, they don't spend 10 minutes waiting around so they can actually do their action because there isn't enough like just getting that information to them. So I've got to come up with a better solution for that. I think the answer for that is to just like I wrote a small bot for like handling a whole bunch of those sorts of things. And I think what I will just do in the future is I will just let players add themselves to a run on a place and they can, and I just give the various abilities to them. Cause then Control doesn't have to do it for 15 people. They just have to stand there and go, okay, I understand what the problem is. Here's the thing that you need, and that will just hopefully fix itself.
Yeah.
I haven't worked out how that's going to work as a on a technical level, but that's a problem for future me.
Awesome. Some quick feedback, Patty. It wasn't even just assigning people into the rooms, but also once we got in the room, sometimes there was a lot of waiting for either the security specialist to come run because maybe they're defending multiple facilities at once, or a control to come fill in for them because they're busy defending multiple facilities.
Yeah. And like the if it's a case of like you've got multiple runs against the same facility, like you are actually like the fact that you have to wait for the other one, but that is intentional. So you, just because you've both hit the same place, that's why there's like an argument about who gets to go first. Because or like also if someone goes first, they might just steal all the stuff you're after anyway. So it's beneficial to try and not hit the same thing. But as a from a control perspective, like we also don't want 15 different runs to handle because it's just that's a lot of work for us to deal with. So like that's I think most of that the main pain points were just around that and like players having to wait around for other stuff. I think just if we have a channel for each facility itself and people just go on there, and then even if you have to wait for someone else's run to complete, at least you're still there and you can heckle from the outside, which at least gives you something to do for 5 minutes.
Arguably, a more important question from the chat is how nice are Gordon Corporation products?
Oh, they're great. Everyone got some of the things. So, like, I probably should explain this. So, for Running Hot, there are 5 different corporations. You have Genetic Equity, who are spun out from a university research project. It's a whole bunch. So when I was writing all of this stuff, to keep myself sane, there's like a load of little jokes that I find funny and no one else will.
Yeah,
so the Genetic Equity one is like kind of a satire on my actual university, because we have a software like engineering bit as part thing. You go work for Genesis, which is like spun off from the corporation, from the university. And like as part of your degree, you go and work for them for free. So that's the entirety of like Genetic Equity is that, but it's biotech stuff. You have the McCulloch Corporation, who are just like some Scottish engineers. And there's like a load of jokes in there that just like there's a joke about an unfunny joke that everyone had during the war because the bomb shelters they made were really good. But if you hid inside them, death couldn't get you. Like the joke doesn't work at all. And I make jokes about the fact the joke doesn't work. you've got the Gordon Corporation, who are definitely not Rupert Murdoch. They're definitely not that at all.
Right.
Who are basically just oppressed stuff. You've got Augmented Nuclear Tech, who are definitely not an Icelandic shell corporation. And like all that, basically all their plot stuff is about the fact that they've got an actual British CEO and their two people have got like Icelandic names, and all of their tech is named Icelandic things, and all their research facilities are named Icelandic things, which was the most funny joke that I could possibly write with, especially when the security player didn't realize what was happening, because everyone was talking about RoboScorpions. He's like, I don't have any! And then at the end of the game, I told him to translate his protection cards, and then there was just a facepalm when he realized that I just translated Robot Scorpion into Icelandic, and that was one of his cards.
Oh,
and then you have Digital Tactical Control, who are like a private military corporation who just are everywhere in the world and all do nasty stuff. So that's kind of like a rough organization of what the corps are. Gordon Corporation, so because they're like a media empire, they spent a lot of time just building up their advertising, so they ended up being quite rich because everyone knew about their products. So they started doing subliminal advertising, and everyone was starting to have dreams about how good the Gordon Corporation was and of how great all their products were. And then everyone was starting to get worried that there was a mind control happening or anything, which there wasn't. Like, it was just subliminal messaging, and everyone was just dreaming about Gordon Corporation. And so I think there was at one point where they asked their corporation control, I was like, oh, can we just like do subliminal advertising to tell people to not think about Gordon Corporation? And I think Cody cackled and said, yes. And then they said, no, actually, make them do something else instead.
It sounds like you had a lot of fun designing this and it all paid off narratively.
Yeah. Like the just writing jokes for yourself makes the entire process of doing a thing. And there's like other like from a writing perspective, the like a whole bunch of protection cards. So you've got like your basic tech stuff, like the subliminal advertising and all that sort of stuff. which are kind of like logical progressions of based on what that corporation is doing. But then like all the like protection cards themselves, they're all like references to various folklore. So the McCulloch stuff, because they're a Scottish corporation, they've got a whole bunch of Celtic folklore in their things. Augmented Nuclear Tech, as a totally not Icelandic corporation, like they've got a lot of references to loads of Icelandic folklore. And then like, I don't, it's really easy when you're right, when you're saying, I want to have like some mythical beast, to just use the mythology that you know of. Like, so using a whole bunch of like Western mythology. So like when I was writing it all, I was like saying, I'm going to explicitly look out for things that like I don't know about and might not be as aware. So that I think there's some definitely like some Asian mythology that I use that. I think there's some, I think I did get some stuff from the Philippines. There's a whole bunch of Jewish folklore. Like it's, which is like, everyone knows about dragons. No one knows about Keresh. Mm. No one knows about Belial or anything like that. And that's kind of what I wanted to go for.
Awesome. Nice. So I thought we might start wrapping up. I wanted to swing back over to you, Glenn, because you did jump in there to give some feedback. And without putting you on the spot, I was going to ask you two things. One is, what do you think that you'd change about this game if you ran it, if you played in it again? And the second is, do you think you'd play it again if given the opportunity?
So answering the second one first, I would play it again, but I would definitely want to play it from a different role. I enjoyed this role, but I want to see what it looks like from the corporate side, because it seems like, feels like they were playing almost like a completely different game from what we were playing.
Mm, cool.
Like there was a council, we had no idea what was happening in the council. Well, actually, we kind of did a little bit, because we were part of a scheme to plant a bug in the council. So we were listening in on some of what was happening.
Awesome.
But I wasn't as involved with that as some of the rest of the team. So I was just doing runs the whole time. And so I would want to see other parts of the game. Because I was doing runs. And then I was also involved in a little bit of kind of like alliance building. Because we had a setup phase, a run phase, and a team phase. And during setup was a chance to go like build alliances with other groups. And I'd bring in people, like get a security specialist come help me on my run. As far as what I would change, I really don't think I have anything extra to add other than what Patty's already mentioned, that that run phase could be streamlined in terms of just getting everybody going.
And Patty, with, I mean, well, beyond that, have you got any other feedback from players yet?
So there was a bit of feedback late last night, like about how there was, it felt that they could just build loads of facilities and hide the tech, like just because they had so many facilities, it was going to be hard to find the right one, which is kind of something I'm okay with. Like it was, the entire point of that bit is it's supposed to be a shell game. So if you decide to just go wide on that, there's that thing. But I think possibly limiting that's probably gonna help out. I've got a whole bunch of control feedback, most of which came from my most valued control, Dan, which is basically a case of please make my job easier, because it was hell at parts just to keep everything going.
Did Dan pull that off?
I think that, although yeah, he ended up slowing down the game, but that was entirely up on me, because I'd basically given him too much stuff to do.
Right.
He was like an absolute trooper at getting everything going as fast as we can. So he said I know I wasn't doing that, but like it wasn't his fault that things were taking longer. It was my fault for designing a game where things can take as long as they did, and not really. If it was just a case that someone could have just pressed a button and everything could have been sorted, then I would have. I think most of the stuff that Dan had to do, he didn't have to do anymore.
Yeah,
and I think that would just help everyone a lot.
Awesome.
I just had one final question before we wrapped up. Patty, what was give us one of your favorite moments or small stories from the game that you haven't already mentioned.
So the Face is one of the gangs. Their entire brief is that they are basically cultish, like have a cultish obsession with a certain actor who's called Case Aniclog. So everyone was convinced that Case Aniclog is Nicolas Cage. Not for any particular reason, and totally not because all the Facer names are Nicolas Cage films, and Case Aniclog is totally not an anagram of Nicolas Cage. Like when I said that I was having a lot of fun writing briefings, they were the most fun to write. Early on, the Gordon Corporation decided they were going to just buy out Nicolas Cage just as a person. So they bought out his intellectual property rights. They heavily funded his next film. I think a whole bunch of faces ended up going on about it, which meant that everyone then knew who the faces were because they were like famous film stars. I think at some point someone kidnapped Nicolas Cage. At some point someone did plastic surgery so they could become Nicolas Cage and then assassinated the real Nicolas Cage because there can only be one. It was like, and like that entire thing was just a really, really dumb joke that I thought of a year ago and it just paid off like that. So it's definitely something I'm going to keep as a thing. I might try and find another actor. But like Nicolas Cage is really, really great for that sort of role because he has some really, really terrible films, and just letting people have a cultish obsession with Nicolas Cage is like, he's the only actor that I think it works for. I can't think of another actor where it would work as well as it does for him.
Definitely. Nice. Awesome. That's hilarious.
At one point we had three Nicolas Cages and nobody knew who was the real one.
Dear. Shenanigans. Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, thank you both for joining us. Last thing I really wanted to ask was, Glenn, what do you think's next for your mega game career? Are you going to jump into designing anything soon, or you'd rather just be a player?
No plans for design, but I would like to volunteer more to help Control. Awesome. I'd like to be more involved that way.
Cool.
That's great.
And Patty, what's next for Running a Hot and yourself, and are those two things the same?
So Running Hot is getting run again in 2 weeks' time for Pennine, and I'm hoping to do in-person runs next year. Like Nationals got postponed by a year, so obviously I've got that. So that's going to happen in April, hopefully as a physical thing, if the world is allowed to start to do that, and then hopefully we'll do a physical run. Basically someone offhand, when they pitched something to the Pennine thing, they pitched like a Dark Souls style universe thing. And I was like, that sounds interesting. Dark Souls isn't interesting though. What about Bloodborne? And I will keep on turning over in my head, like, can you make a Bloodborne mega game? Like, does that work as a thing? That's the next thing I really want to work on. So I think the idea of the hunt in Bloodborne is could be quite a good one, but is it actually a mega game, or is it just a board game for 16 people? But I'm not thinking about that for 9 months. It's a lot of work designing a mega game. I don't want to design another one for a bit.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, awesome. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you both for sharing, for chatting to us. Really sounds like it was a great success for your first game, Patty, so congratulations.
Thank you very, very much.
And looking forward to whatever comes next. Thank you both.
Thank you for inviting us on.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thanks to everyone listening along. All right. Thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks again to Patty from Pennine Mega Games, and to Glenn from Mega Game Texas. We'll have links to both of those groups in the show notes if you'd like to go and see what else they're working on. As always, you can reach me at thesydneymegagamers.com, also on Facebook and on Instagram. And of course, you can find The Great Game on Facebook and on our Discord.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can shoot me an email at jack@ashtowngames.com if you want to. Join us for our next episode where we'll be talking about feedback from a player and designer perspective. So catch you then.